Good morning. This is the Subcommittee on General Government. Today is Tuesday, April the 26th. I am going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5059, the Public Employees Retirement System. And welcome Mr. Clary, who will introduce Mr. Pittman. Good morning, Ms. Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Clary, Executive Director at the Public Employee Retirement System, and it's my great pleasure today to introduce you to our board chair, Mike Pittman. Mike has been the chair of the board since the reconfiguration to the new five-member board in September of 2003, so he's got more than a year under his belt, and he's still on the job, which I certainly appreciate. And as I talked with you yesterday, the expertise, the experience, and the perspective that our five board members bring, as exemplified, I think, by Mike, has really helped me in taking on the challenges that I've seen at up at PERS, and I greatly appreciate their willingness to continue to serve. It's turning out that actually I've got one of the easier jobs in state government because I've got them as a board. Unfortunately, they've got one of the tougher jobs because they've got me as the executive director, so we'll turn that over to Mike then.
Good morning, Mr. Pittman. For the record, would you state your name, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Pittman. I'm here in this capacity as chair of the Public Employee Retirement Board, System Board. And if it pleases the committee, I thought what I would do is just try to quickly walk through a presentation that we have prepared, which I understand you have in front of you. And recognizing people have time constraints today, what I thought I would do is just kind of walk through this fairly quickly, pause after each page, and feel free to interrupt me. So if that would meet everybody's expectation, I'll just start in.
I think that sounds just fine. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me start with the fact that with the reconfiguration of the board in September 1 of 2003, there were five new members of the board that really met together for the first time at a PERS board meeting in that function. So it's been a challenge for us, but I would say we've made significant strides. And if I could just describe the five board members briefly to give some comfort about the board and their capabilities. I'm the senior human resource person for Scottish Power, which is the parent company for Pacific Corp and Pacific Power for both the UK and the US, and in that capacity of responsibility for pensions in the UK and the US. James Dalton is the general counsel for Tektronix, as well as head of mergers and acquisitions and business development. Eva Kripalani is senior general counsel of KinderCare, and before that she has experience as a securities lawyer. And then probably all of you know Brenda Rockland, who's been an excellent board member and brings a working knowledge of state agencies, which has been extremely helpful. And Tom Grimsley is a teacher in the Bethel School District representing the members, and Tom's also been an excellent board member. And while, in fact, all the board members don't always see eye to eye on everything, we have a lot of respect for one another's views, and I think the board's been an effective board in working through a lot of complicated issues. We have a significant budget, and I think, as was described yesterday, there is a differentiation between our duties and the duties of the Oregon Investment Council, but there is a linkage as well. Any questions on that one?
I think you can just proceed ahead.
Just keep going?
Yep.
Okay. So since September of 2003, the board has faced a lot of challenges. And the legislature passed a new plan, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, and that included an individual account program, and then we have obviously the ongoing obligation to manage Tier 1 and Tier 2 legacy components. We've had significant amount of litigation we've had to work our way through, and we inherited that when we walked in the door. We've had to help the agency process a record increase in retirements. We had about 12,000 in 2003, and I think normally the agency would say they would process about 4,000 to 5,000. This is an agency that is really an organization that is transactional oriented, and as such, things like process improvement and how we do our work is really critical. So we've spent a lot of time trying to think about how we streamline the processes to be as efficient as possible, and with that comes the need for new IT systems. But we all know the hazards of procuring IT systems without appropriate rigor and discipline, and I think that several of the board members have brought a strong oversight to that process. We've now in the process of complying with the Supreme Court's Strunk decision, and we await the outcome of the City of Eugene, which we commonly call the Lipscomb decision. And since the board has taken over, we've obviously worked with new management. We've made some management changes of the board. We have a new actuary that was a result of a RFP process, and we have a new legal team as well, which is one of the decisions that came out of the legislative reform. If I'm going too fast or too slow, let me know. If I go to what you have in front of you, slide four, let me just start by saying that the PERS system is incredibly complicated. There are a lot of moving pieces. And for those of us that even live in this world, there are oftentimes unintended consequences and surprises if you don't understand the right questions to ask and understand all the interrelationships. So we have spent a lot of time just trying to make sure before any decisions get made that we understand all the implications and consequences of any decisions, recognizing that we are there really to implement the decision of the legislature. But we are very cautious about what we do, and we have set forward a set of values for the agency, particularly with respect to transparency for all stakeholders about exactly what is going on. And I will say at this point that the LFL staff, Dallas and Cora with Daz and others, have been extremely helpful. And we've tried to work through this process of transparency in a in an open fashion with our other partners within state government. This is an important chart, and I gave that little prelude because one of the things we've been trying to really understand is what did we inherit in September of 2003 and what has happened since. Now, and I'm not going to focus on all of this, but I will focus on a couple things. The unfunded actuarial liability is a significant issue for us. Because it is one of the drivers for employer rates going forward. And while the normal cost of the plan, that is what percent of payroll would you expect to normally contribute on an annual basis with this plan, is about 12.5% for Tier 1, Tier 2, and down to, what did we say, Paul, 8.5% for the new plan. The reality is employer rates get moved up significantly because of this unfunded actuarial liability. And post the Strunk decision, what we have is $8.3 billion of unfunded actuarial liability without side accounts, which is pension obligation bonds for some or most, but not for all. And then with the money that's put in theory in advance, the $3.8 billion with side accounts. That leaves us with a system-funded status now, if you go to the right-hand side on the second column, of about 82% without these side accounts and 92%. And so as we try to catch up to full funding, we are seeing contribution rates continue to rise. So that goes down to obviously an issue that's near and dear to everyone's heart, which is, you know, what do we need to pay for the system, because that has an impact on services statewide, everything from teachers to other kinds of issues that we all know about. And post-Strunk right now, without the phase-in that the board did, the rates would be about 22.1% without side accounts. For those that have them, it's about 17.6. Now, the board took a decision to phase in what would have been a significant rate increase this last time, trying to make sure that, in fact, we're still acting prudently, so, in fact, we're not adding to the problem, or leading to a problem, I should say, in the future. But at the same time, trying to recognize that, in fact, these kinds of increases are really difficult for state and municipal governments.
Mr. Pittman, may I interrupt you? Mm-hmm. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Good morning.
Morning.
As an individual who's not even going to pretend to be knowledgeable on the PERS situation, is the reason that we have that post-Strunk conditions that we're only at 82% without the side accounts is because we have a guaranteed rate of return?
There are a number of reasons. We have a guaranteed, I mean, this went up because we have a guaranteed 8% annual return now, and it did reverse some of the reform legislation, such as the COLA impact. So if you look at between the third and fourth column, that's the reason for that difference.
But if we had follow up, thank you. If we had never had a guaranteed rate of return, and the amount contributed was based upon market conditions, was the amount you would get back, then wouldn't we be at 100%? What am I missing here? I'm trying to figure out how.
I'm not sure. I totally understand your question, Representative Smith.
Well, I apologize.
No,
I might take a stab, Chair Johnson, Representative Smith.
How did we get to 82%?
You've got two things that affect your funded ratio. If your investment returns are meeting your assumptions, or if your liabilities are meeting your assumptions. And what we had with the Strump decision is we had an addition of $2.1 billion in unfunded liability. Yesterday we went through the details on that. It was about 1.4 associated with the Tier 1 rate guarantee and about $700 million associated with the COLA freeze. But that, again, was just kind of from the liability side. But you've also, if your investment returns aren't meeting your assumptions and really in a mature plan...
By assumptions, I just want to understand this just real quick. That means agreement.
The assumed earnings rate, we assume that we're going to earn over the long term...
In order to meet
about
agreements.
About 8%, right, yeah.
Can I take a shot at this as well?
I
think this is an important point. I'll just spend a moment on this. The pension plans make assumptions about what it takes to fulfill their obligations on the long term, and these assumptions are done with the help of actuaries. And you have really two sides to this equation. You have assets, which are really the assets in the fund managed by OIC, and you have liabilities. And the liabilities are... what is your obligation for future benefits as well as your obligation for accrued benefits? And that is driven by a number of assumptions, such as rate of return assumption. We assume that we're going to earn 8% a year every year. It has to do with the demographics of the people that are covered by the plan, you know, the actual benefit formula, et cetera. And when the assets equal this liabilities, then you're at 100% funding.
Got it.
What obviously Strunk did was it added some dollars to the liability side of the equation, which, you know, added a bit to the unfunded status of the plan.
Just one last follow-up. And the reason that was added on was because some entity negotiated some agreement that costed additional dollars more than we had in the asset side.
Yeah, the Strunk decision, I mean, basically the Supreme Court determined that, in fact, part of the legislative reforms were unconstitutional. And as a result, there was a contractual right both to the COLA and to the annual 8% guarantee return assumption. And when they made that decision, they're basically saying you owe more money than you think you do, and so therefore it adds to the liability side.
You gentlemen are running this.
I guess the only other thing that I would point out here is that prior to this board taking office, we did not have any money in either the contingency reserve or the capital preservation reserve, and the board has put, you know, approximately $2 billion into those reserves, which will help mitigate some of the things like the post-Strunk decisions. And this is, we have not made some crediting decisions based upon the last set of earnings. So these numbers will change slightly, including, I suspect, the board will put some additional funds in the reserves and also maybe use the reserves to, I suspect the board will use reserves to offset some of the impact of the Strunk decision. Okay, if I go to slide 5, I just want to point out that, in fact, there's a number of pieces of what go into employer rates, and this shows you what those rates have been over time. The bottom bar is what we would call the normal cost. This is like, if everything's in perfect harmony, what it would cost to run this plan. And there's the member 6% contribution, which is the dark bar above that. For many, that's paid by the employer, but not by all. And then there's the employer unfunded actuarial liability payment, which is kind of
the middle bar.
I should bring my color copy here, which is this middle bar, excuse me. So the bottom bar is normal cost. Middle bar is this UAL payment, which is catching up to get us to full funding status. Then you have the member 6% contribution. And then on the far right-hand bar, what we've done is we've shown that, in fact, we now have this new plan where there's an individual account plan 6% contribution. I guess the only point of this is saying that we are still in a situation where we're going to see some fairly significant rates going forward, and that the board, again, is working hard to manage this, but, you know, we want to be clear that there are a number of challenges in doing so. If I go to page 6, one of the big drivers here is our ability to earn our rate of return assumption of 8%. And I think that's very important, will be important for us going forward. And if we do that, we would expect, without side accounts, the rate to be around that 20% level. And that does not include the 6% IAP contribution, or again, it does not include the benefits of these side accounts, which many employers such as the state have. But, you know, what we did was we asked our actuary, based on the knowledge that we have today and all the moving pieces, what can we expect going forward? And this is the chart that they've come forward with. If I go to page 7, one of the things that we have to deal with, which is just the reality of life that many people deal with in their own personal lives, as well as the volatility of the markets. And this shows the rates of return from 99 to 2004. And one of the things that the actuary has recommended in the past that we've accepted and that is currently in place is that we have what we call smoothing, where we try to smooth out this volatility from year to year. So you can see this number, which is how much of these gains or losses in the bottom in parentheses or positive, how much of these gains and losses do we take credit for on an annual basis as we calculate the funded status of the plan?
Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette.
What's your best guess for 05?
Well, this year the rates are set, they're set at approximately 15-something percent. And the board made that decision to really split the projected increase, which is about 10. So we added about 5% to existing rates this year, hoping that, in fact, we would be able to mitigate that additional increase when it comes in next biennium. But now that we have some additional information, such as a strong decision and whatever, I can't really predict at this stage what the rates will be at the next biennium, but they will go up. I can say that for a fair amount of certainty, they will probably go up from that number. And we've tried to make that very clear in our board meetings based upon the knowledge that we have today.
Right.
Mr. Cleary.
Madam Chair, in terms of best guess on investment returns, I can tell you that we just got the first quarter's information in, and we're pretty flat. We're just slightly ahead. I remember less than two tenths of a percent. But this is a difficult investment climate that we're faced with right now, no doubt about it. We have seen dramatic turnarounds even in the last quarter of a year, but we kind of have a long term perspective with this plan. We've got to have a long term perspective.
I think that what you touch on is important, and that's the public education piece of this. This is complicated on its simplest day, and I think part of the explanation that we struggle with in interacting with constituents who glean their information from a variety of sources is to explain how is it that we went through all of these painful reforms and we still have rates that are going up. And it's easy in the absence of solid information for people to speculate or conjure up reasons why this is occurring. And I don't know to what degree the agency and the legislature work in partnership to try to do some kind of broader outreach to explain to local government or just the public at large exactly what our situation is here and why it is that even post-reform we still see substantial rate increases.
Madam Chair, can I attempt to answer part of that?
Please.
I said at the beginning, this is a very complicated system, and I know that the reforms were difficult and painful. And it did address a number of things going forward. So for new employees going forward, I said, like I said, the normal cost as such is about 8.5% of payroll as opposed to 12.5%. But it will take a long time for those to work in, keeping in mind that probably, and this is a rough number, but I think about 65% of the liabilities are already accrued and fixed. And we now have, with the Strunk decision, an obligation to credit those accounts at a fairly significant amount, 8% a year, when in fact, as Paul indicated, for instance, this year, we very likely won't make our rate of return assumption, or that's certainly a real possibility. The other issue is that while in fact reforms really dealt effectively with the growing money match problem, which was adding liabilities to the plan significantly, and that is the way the benefits were calculated prior to benefit payment, it did create some other challenges for us. For instance, the new individual account plan, 6% contribution, which is a member's contribution, is going now into a new plan. And that's not actually going now to reduce the liabilities of Tier 1 and Tier 2. So, again, there are a number of moving parts here which will ultimately have an impact on rates going forward. So, with the committee's guidance and help and with Paul's advice, the board would be more than happy to participate in whatever way to help try to educate and make clear the challenges that we have going forward. But it's, like you said, it's not easy.
There are a couple of forums that immediately spring to my mind, and it may be that under Mr. Cleary's leadership, PERS is already a presence. But AOC, Association of Oregon Counties, has a large convocation, well attended by local decision makers, as does the League of Oregon Cities. And I don't know whether or not you have a presence at either of those conventions where you would have an opportunity to sit with local decision makers and walk through this thoughtfully.
Madam Chair, we certainly do, and we were in front of the Association of Counties last fall, as well as working with the cities at the League of Cities Convention and also with the school board administrators, and I'll be back in front of the school board administrators here in the summer. And I think as Chair Pittman indicated, we've got a real interest in making sure that people have as clear an understanding of this system and that we get agreement around what the facts are. I remember U.S. Senator Al Simpson in Wyoming used to say everybody's entitled to their own set of opinions, but they're not entitled to their own set of the facts. And so what we're trying to do is get people to agree on a set of facts. And that's certainly an obligation that we've got.
Senator Morsett.
One other point of confusion, I think, is which employees are entitled to the employer payment. I know that is based on a contractual agreement that took place at various times when they didn't have enough for an increase, and so they promised that they would make their 6%. Now, where is that at the present time? I don't imagine there are any new agreements, new contractual agreements to that effect. So at some point, I'm sure the employers would love to unload that back to the employees.
I need Paul to probably answer this, Senator Morissette, and the rest of the committee. Here's my understanding, as we've tried to understand this as board members. That is a subject of collective bargaining between the individual entities and their local unions, so whether it's school district, the state, et cetera. And so while that varies, it's our understanding that many, probably three-quarters, was the number that I heard, employers have, out of collective bargaining, agreed to pick up that 6%. And where that goes in the future, I can't say.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I would point out that as a part of the reform legislation, they were required to maintain those agreements, I believe, until the end of this calendar year. And then if they renegotiate them, they're supposed to report that to us, because we'll continue to go on the bill on the basis of the prior agreements until we're reported otherwise. But again, as Chair Pittman indicated, that's a matter of collective bargaining and individual bargaining at a number of different levels.
Thank you. Mr. Pittman, would you please continue?
I'm going to move to page 8, Representative Krupp.
How are you, sir? Good
fine, to see you. Thank you. So I'll just leave you with a few thoughts and conclusions, and I think I speak for all the board members here. There's been a huge amount of change since 2003 that the board's had to address. The litigation uncertainties have really been a challenge for us, and so we've had to manage litigation from all the union member-related groups as well as employers, and so we've taken our fiduciary duties in a very serious manner, but like I said, it's been a huge challenge for us, and fortunately, we do have a couple attorneys on our board as well. But not all of these litigation issues are settled and probably won't be for a long time, to be honest. One of the things that we felt had been maybe a bit overlooked because the focus had been so much on the rate issues is that there were huge operational efficiency and process issues we felt we had to address by the agency. And we've taken those on as a board. We have made some management changes, and we are very pleased with the current management. But it has been a challenge. So when the budget comes before you and has lots of limited duration positions and other kinds of things, you can be assured that the board presses hard on how we got to those numbers, when would we expect them to go away, do we really have a detailed thought process of how we're going to move forward as an agency with all of this. As I mentioned, that both the new plan and the old IT systems are complex, and quite frankly, if you want to take the member stakeholder issues, in many ways they deserve better as well, because the information that we produce historically has not necessarily been timely. It's not always been as accurate as it could be, and I think that has resulted in a lot of confusion, and I think that we have pressed the agency, and I think they are really trying to respond with much better information, much more timely, and greater accuracy, which I think will benefit all in the future. So in summary, the board is very pleased with current management. We have a lot of talented people at the agency struggling with a lot of very difficult issues. I think we've made a lot of progress with internal efficiency, but I will tell you as a board member, it is a challenge to meet the expectations of all the stakeholders, whether that's the unions, the members, the employers, the business community. But I think we try hard to play it straight down the middle, and I guess our greatest attribute will be that we are really, really trying to be as transparent as possible about not only our decisions but the impact of those decisions. The board is still very concerned with the future of the system costs and rate volatility going forward. The board has not fully explored, and we are working on this hard, to understand all the options available to the board to help manage that going forward. And so that's going to be an issue for us over the next couple quarters. And we are now beginning to have a better understanding of all the PERS reform and litigation and so on and so forth. And then again, I cannot state enough the importance of, to Paul's point, just being clear about what the facts are and making sure that before any decisions get made, we understand all the consequences and implications of those decisions.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Pittman? I can't tell you how much we appreciate you taking time to come down here and interact with this panel in your capacity as the chair. This is the third year that I, or the third session that I've had the opportunity to hear this budget, and without hesitation, I can see and want to compliment you for the changes that have occurred. I think this agency has come before the panel with a very thoughtful, factual presentation, and your presence here, I think, just continues to restore the legislature's confidence in the ability of the agency to grapple with the kinds of problems that you have laid out. So thank you very much for coming today.
Well, thank you. Your comments are very much appreciated.
We would invite you to stay as we begin to work through the budget, or, recognizing that you have many other responsibilities, let you take your leave, whichever suits you. Mr. Clary, anything to add as your chair leaves the witness?
Again, Madam Chair, I think you just see the value that the citizens of Oregon get from people like Chair Pittman being willing to serve on these boards. And I would point out again that it is for zero remuneration. We did plug his meter for him.
Mr. Pittman, before you go, one of the things the professional staff wants to comment too, but I have a question that I'd like to ask you. There has been some question about the location of your facility located as you are on I-5, and I know I'm asking you a question that would cause you to have to drive additional miles. Would you have any thoughts as the chairman of the board about the relocation of the agency closer to Salem and or in Salem?
Well, only from a selfish perspective.
And you're allowed to offer the selfish perspective.
And that is, I do live in the Portland area, and as do several of the other board members, which make it much easier for us to juggle challenging schedules. Would we have board members resign if this was in Salem? Probably not. I mean, we only actually go to the board offices once a month. But it has been very helpful and convenient for us to have it in the Portland area. Based upon just the sheer population, in the future I would anticipate that, at least two or three of the board members would probably come from that area based upon people with kind of expertise in these various areas. However, having said that, I recognize the importance of having statewide representation, having the connection to the legislature, the governor's office, and other stakeholders. So for me, it's a matter of convenience, and it is what it is. I mean, that's what it was when I signed on. If the offices had been here, would I have made a different choice? I don't think so.
Mr. Cleary, do you have any comments?
Well, Madam Chair, as we talked yesterday, of course, any move can be disruptive, and we're kind of in a climate right now where we're trying to become stabilized, and we certainly would want to take that into account. I think as the agency moves forward and gets to its ultimate size that we're looking at, we then will want to look at the facilities that we've got. You'll recall that right now we're in two different buildings. We're hoping that we'll shrink back to one building. We're hoping, obviously, that one building that we've got right now will continue to fit us. But if we were faced with a different situation, you'd want to factor in where that agency should be located then. But I would hope that we'd take into account the fact that moves can be disruptive. We've got a lot of disruptions going on. Let's try to get settled down some before we examine that in any greater detail.
I think maybe what this is drawing from is just exactly what Mr. Pittman articulated, closer proximity to the governor and the legislature and certainly stakeholders. I don't think anybody's contemplating any kind of abrupt change, recognizing the challenges that lie ahead of the agency, but at least to open up the dialogue about it. I'd invite any comments from the professional staff.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. In my write-up on this budget, I suggested this might be a time to start thinking about it. I think one of the contributing factors to all the issues that brought about the reform legislation, one of the contributing factors was proximity to Salem. And what we saw is a real disconnect between the operations up in Tigard and that of the rest of state government. So we think that something worthy of consideration for the future. This certainly is a transition period right now, and we wouldn't recommend it at this point in time at all, but just to lay it out on the table for possible consideration for the future.
And I think that's all we're trying to accomplish here, is just to open the door to add this to the manifold other things that the board has to contemplate. I certainly don't see any sort of sense of urgency on the part of the legislature to ask for a relocation, but at least to, in your future planning, to contemplate it and at least think about what the advantages, the disadvantages might be, and be prepared to present them to the legislature at some point in time.
That's fine. And just a thought. I mean, long term, and I would really recommend that for the next couple of years that we don't really do anything seriously on this as we go through a lot of change. But long term, the reality is that we draw on a lot of talent from other state government agencies. For instance, right now we are having a real challenge to find qualified audit professionals for the agency. And I think if we resided in Salem, we might have a better chance at attracting some audit professionals from other agencies, because you know, quite frankly, people don't want to commute. And the Portland area, based upon the corporate environment and Sarbanes-Oxley, it's gotten incredibly expensive to find qualified audit professionals. So that's a thought.
Madam Chair, in the interest of disclosure, just so my staff that's listening to this understands, you know, of course, I live here in Salem.
But we know this is totally motivated by you, and you brought this whole thing up.
I didn't ask Alice to bring this up, but and one of the few things that they did tell me about this job was it was located up in Tigard, so I took the job with that understanding.
Well, I want to leave this conversation because there are a lot of people listening to this that I don't see anything imminent. You've raised some very good reasons why this would be a long range consideration, but at least we wanted to open the door to see if the board could, in your spare time, wrestle with any of the advantages of being located here. But again, for the people that are listening, no sense of urgency on this at all. And again, in front of your chair, I'd like to commend Mr. Cleary for making the management decisions both yesterday and today to have with him only the core staff that he needs. Everybody else is back up at the shop working. And so instead of looking out over a sea of PERS faces, he made the decision to keep folks at their duty stations.
Bravo, Madam Chair. Bravo.
And I think that is very much appreciated.
Madam Chair, if I may interject, expect momentarily that we're going to be experiencing an earthquake drill. I just saw staff walking down the hallway with a bullhorn and vests on, so I'm sorry, but expect it shortly.
Well, I'm glad you warned me, because when the siren goes off, an old lady with a bad heart, I might have just keeled over.
So much for
Mr. Pittman, that might be all the more reason why you would want to flee
and
not
be
in this building.
Yeah, it's probably good for you to leave now.
Again, we thank you for your service to Oregonians. I'm not sure sometimes in the debate that people realize the fiduciary responsibility that you all have taken on, your board managing a fund of this magnitude, in addition to juggling your own responsibilities at Scottish Power. We are very fortunate to have people of your caliber and talent step forward to help us at a critical time. And on behalf of the panel and the legislature, thank you for your service.
Thank you for your kind comments. Thank you.
All right. Dallas.
Madam Chair, you have a quorum. You can close the work session. We can close the public hearing and we can go to work session on the bill.
I think that's exactly what we'll do. I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5059 and open a work session on House Bill 5059. And I believe you have a staff recommendation for our perusal.
That I do, Madam Chair. You have before you our staff recommendations with respect to the budget. I will go through it briefly with you.
Thank you.
The first recommendation is to approve the non-limited expenditure authority that they've asked for the tiers 1 and 2 in the OPSRP plan. You'll remember we have put things under limitation. We believe these types of expenditures should remain under non-limited expenditure authority. With respect to expenditure limitations for operations, we are recommending a reduction in other funds limitation by $253,578 for the PERS rate reduction and another $68,054 for the Attorney General rate reduction. We would also recommend that yesterday, if you'll remember, they presented the impact of the Strom decision where they said they were going to reduce it. They would save money here, but they're going to add back. And so the net result was an increase in 11 positions. We are recommending approval of that, and that would be in a recommended increase, approve their supplemental request of $1,739,005 other funds limitation, and the establishment of 11 additional limited duration positions, 11. 0.0 FTE for them to implement the Strunk decision. They're going to have to go back and credit to all Tier 1 members 8% for 2003 and then make readjust all the calculations for 2004 in addition to undoing the cost of living adjustments that were previously frozen for retirees. So this and then this will cause them to have to recalculate retirement benefits for those who retired lacking the distribution of the 8%, so we're recommending that adjustment. We're also recommending we approve the amount of that was included in the governor's recommendation, the governor's recommended budget for debt service. That's fairly straightforward, and that is subject to limitation. With respect to performance measures, we're concurring with the public employee retirement system. We do not approve performance measures numbers one and numbers 3 through 8. They had asked that they be able to modify performance measure number 2, and then also to approve interim measures that they felt were far better suited to their operation. They had to do with costs for maintaining accounts and the like. And so we are recommending approval of those interim measures. We've also added to this list the two standard customer satisfaction performance measures that they will come up with targets for, and they will be returning them to the to us in the 2007 session with a report on their interim performance measures and then the customer satisfaction measures. Also, for discussion with committee, one of the co-chairs has suggested a measure that PERS be required to report on, and that is, this has to do with replacement ratio for those retirees that are going out now. Replacement ratio is the retirement benefit as the numerator, the denominator being the monthly salary or the annual salary that they went out under. There was a lot in the media about people going out at 100%+ of their pay. Because of the mix of the retirees, not many go out under 30 years, but I think for purposes of comparing apples to apples, we think that to track this, we really need to look at the replacement ratio for those members who reach normal retirement age of 30 years, and that the Public Employees Retirement System report on that. The discussion really is, for this committee, is whether you want it to be one of their performance measures that they report on when it's really out of their control, or it be something that they report to us when they come forward with their budget requests and publicly report that on where the replacement ratios are and have been.
Any thinking of that from the committee? Representative Krupp.
Madam Chair, I think that's an outstanding idea, specifically. I think it would be very helpful in future legislative committees to understand where the funding needs will be and what we will need to address in the long term in regards to PERS, and I think it's an excellent measurement. I highly approve.
Senator Morsette.
Should not be a performance measure. It's out of their control. It's just a report.
And I think that was your comment as well, that you would have them make this report in the next budget presentation back to this committee.
Madam Chair, it's still a measurement that I think the legislative body needs to see. It's a calculation that the body needs to see to really have a good understanding of where PERS is headed for the future. I think it would be critical to good decision-making down the road.
I share that opinion. Any other comments from the panel? Then I think, Dallas, what you're hearing is consensus that we would follow Representative Krupp's lead and that this would be publicly reported, that it would not be a performance measure given how far out of the agency's control it is, but we would figure out a mechanism to have it reported back to the legislature.
Right. And the budget report will reflect that discussion and ask them to return and make this a normal part of their presentation.
Okay. Mr. Cleary, you've had the opportunity to go over this with Mr. Winan. Do you have any comments before we actively begin working the recommendations?
No, ma'am. Appreciate the support of the LFO staff and look forward to your favorable action.
Good. And Ms. Parker, we heard from you yesterday. Any additional comments that you'd like to make?
Madam Chair, BAM generally agrees with the recommendations in the report. The only item, and I say this without any intent to muddy the waters at all, the only thing I'd like to put on the record is that with respect to information technology efforts that are underway right now, there likely will be the need for a carry-forward adjustment that will be brought forward to an emergency board in the interim. That was something that the committee did during budget presentations last time, and it caused some confusion because of making an estimate and then having to reconcile. So just for the record, and put into the budget report.
Dallas, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, Madam Chair, we're fine with that. What that is the estimated expenditures they plan for this session or this interim. They may not be able to spend all the money for those purposes that are achieved. They'll ask for that limitation again, having not used it if they didn't use last time. And we're fine with that.
And Madam Chair, to Dallas, again, in approving this budget with your LFO recommendations, we are also approving the policy option packages that are in the governor's recommended budget.
That is correct. Most of those were to address workload.
Right. Very good.
Great. Well, with that, we will begin. I think we're going to do this one element at a time, and so the chair would entertain recommendation on the Tiers 1 and 2 plan with the LFO recommendation. Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation with respect to Tiers 1 and 2 plan. Any objection? So ordered. The chair would entertain a motion on the operations program LFO recommendation. Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation with respect to the operations program. Any objection? So ordered. The chair, Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation with respect to debt service. Any objection? So ordered. Representative Smith moves the performance measures as recommended by LFO. including the understanding that the PERS retirement income replacement ratio for members that reach normal retirement age will be included in the budget report and will be reported back out to the legislature. Any objection? So ordered.
Okay,
Dallas, any for the good of the order?
For the good of the order, Madam Chair, we will have the amendments prepared and we will then this will go to full committee with approval as amended. We also have another bill before us. Please don't run away.
Still need carriers.
We need carriers first, but I saw people get married. We also have a fee bill that we can open a brief public hearing on in our first session. But if we get the carriers, this one.
Senator Morris, how would you feel about being the carrier to full on this
one?
Good. Senator Morris, this went without saying that it was a recommendation for due pass to the full ways and means. And our House carrier, Representative Babakian steps forward. Senator Morris on the Senate side.
Only if Representative Krupp can accompany in harmony.
I am going to close the work session on House Bill 5059 and open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5050. This is a 5060.
You
noticed it wrong.
Dallas.
That's a hangable offense, Dallas. House Bill 5060, for the record, the Public Employees Retirement System Fee Bill. Mr. Cleary.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is a ratification, as I understand it, of a requirement that was adopted last year. What the legislature asked us to do, because of concern that we were incurring unreasonable expenses associated with multiple requests for estimated benefits. This is people that are looking at potentially retiring or otherwise getting out of the system. The concern was is that we were getting more than reasonable requests. We ought to impose a fee after two requests, and that fee was set at $60. It's interesting. We actually haven't incurred multiple requests ever since we adopted this legislation. So it was intended to kind of be a deterrent. It has been, and at the same time, prior to the Strunk litigation, we had been able to get our benefit estimate calculator, which is up on our website, totally programmed to reflect all the reform legislation so people could actually go on and do their own benefit estimate and know that it was extremely accurate. We're working now on updating that. Of course, we're going to hold off until we hear from Lipscomb to do the final update, but we want to make sure people still have that available to them, and we're going to do that, and so we'd appreciate the committee's ratification of this.
Ms. Parker?
Budget management agrees.
Mr. Wyman?
We will agree also.
Any discussion among the committee? I'm sorry. Close the public hearing on House Bill 5060, and I would like to say for the record that the agenda was noticed correctly. This is a typo on the agenda. Just so that we have that memorialized on the record. And we'll open a work session on House Bill 5060. Any discussion among the committee?
Would you like a motion?
I would. Representative Smith moves approval of House Bill 5060, the fee bill for the public employees retirement system. Any objection? Without objection, so ordered. And again, we need carriers, and let's, with your permission, stick with the same carriers so that it's all packaged together. Okay? Good. Mr. Clary, you look as though you have a closing comment.
Madam Chair, I would just point out that we did have a request, and we responded to that for a copy of the audit letter that we got from the Secretary of State and our management response to that. This is one that had 13 recommendations. Seven of them you'll see the actual response to. Six of them were related to the confidential letter that we got on our IT security, and so we didn't provide that, but we will tell you that we're on schedule to respond on all of those as well.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. Clary? Thank you. Just as concluding remarks, Mr. Clary, I would thank you for a very thoughtful presentation. I think having Mr. Pittman here added greatly to this panel's confidence in the management of PERS. You're heading out into some complicated waters, and I think that as a result of this presentation and Mr. Pittman's remarks, that I speak for the whole panel in saying that we feel confident that you're headed in a good direction, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. They do a good job keeping me on the straight and narrow.
Unless there is objection from the committee, we are going to close the work session on House Bill 5060, and without objection, stand adjourned. And Dallas, tomorrow we will be back here at 8:30 with